It's March, and you know what that means. It's les rendez-vous de la francophonie.
Check out rvf.ca to discover all the activities and contests happening across Canada.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Welcome to Kangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we have quite a busy week for you today. In fact, we have an interview with a good friend of the show. I believe he's a doctor, or has a doctorate. Tom Hooper is the assistant professor at York University, specializing in history. But he is somewhat making that history as he has pulled at the threads and unraveled significant allegations of fraud at Pride Toronto, the largest Pride organization in the country. This led to the largest payback by a queer organization to the government in Canadian history, as millions of dollars at, no, was it 500,000? I forget the exact amount. But a very significant sum of money is now being paid back to the government because of the way and the deliveries upon which those grants were made. All the details coming later in the show. Now, are you aware that the Calgary Stampede has got itself into a bit of hot water?
Shouldn't you say it got itself into a dust-up?
Yes, but this is actually quite a serious topic.
Wouldn't you say that the Calgary Stampede got the bull by the horns?
On
the ropes?
No, they're on the ropes. The issue here is that they didn't take the bull by the horns. So last year and quite recently, Philip Harima pled guilty in his 2018 trial of 8 charges, including sexual assault, sexual exploitation, luring, and making child pornography. He was at the Young Canadian School for Performing Arts, which is funded through the and operated through the Calgary Stampede Foundation. So the Calgary Stampede has its own foundation. They ran this Canadian School for Performing Arts. They typically during the parade, during the Stampede, the School for Performing Arts does performances, the kinds of things that you would expect, grandstand shows, etc. During the Stampede. However, Mr. Harima has now pled guilty to multiple charges. He, in fact, told he told the media after, investigators, that not all of his victims had come forward. He targeted young men between the ages of 15 to 17 who were at the school between 1992 and 2013. This all came to light during the recent investigation and then the court case where he pled guilty. And it shocked a lot of folks in the gay community, including those who may well have been victims of Mr. Harima, to see the Calgary Stampede marching in the Pride Parade, despite being found to have been pretty negligent in how they operated, which created an environment where Philip Harima was able to do these atrocious acts. So on the one hand, you have this atrocious man doing atrocious acts in an organization funded or ran by the Calgary Stampede Foundation. And then the queer community in Calgary is perplexed as to why that very same allegedly negligent organization is now marching in a pride parade, having hired and maintained the employ of this serial abuser.
Well, did they know? That's the other thing. Like, did they know and cover it up? Were they just negligent? Did they fail to do a background check? Did they fail to do the standard, like, because if it starts in the early 2000s, this would have been long after the Irish Catholic scandal. This would have been long after the various Catholic school scandals, the hockey team scandals, the Boy Scout scandals. They would have known.
It's quite a list of scandals, yeah.
Two adults in a room. They would have known by then. That actually, it was around then that some of the earliest grumblings of the Kevin Spacey accusations came forward as well, and actually some of the earliest grumblings of the Harvey
The Weinstein, yes.
the Weinstein
It was the
accusations.
whole Me Too movement where
Yeah,
these
yeah,
things
yeah.
came forward.
So
They did know. There was a
they did
class
know.
action lawsuit filed by
Okay.
over three dozen, what about three dozen complainants, and the Calgary Stampede admitted to negligence and breach of duty, and in fact, just this last month has paid out over $9.5 million in damages.
Ooh.
The decision has been made this month by the Calgary Pride organization to essentially not invite back the Calgary Stampede. They have been effectively banned for the foreseeable future. It's not permanent. And the goal here of Calgary Pride, I mean, first of all, I want to establish that the queer community have very few options. And who is invited to attend the parade is one of the only mechanisms available to demonstrate support, approval, or disapproval of the conduct of organizations. Typically, that we see this leveraged against police, but in this case, they've leveraged it against the Calgary Stampede. They are hoping, and there's a great quote here, the CBC has a fantastic article on it saying, quote, "We invite the Calgary Stampede to engage in constructive dialogue and demonstrate their commitment to becoming stronger allies to the 2S LGBT community." They go on to say, essentially hoping that they would look at supportive initiatives for survivors of sexual violence. And fundamentally, in order for the Calgary Stampede to march with gay men, young gay men in Calgary, they need to demonstrate that they're earning back trust and that they are safe for those very same gay men following these horrific crimes by Hirima.
Well, I mean, it does seem on the one hand that largely it was just, it's not that the Calgary Stampede is unsafe, it's that one individual is
Well,
unsafe
they
and that
admitted
the
to
organization was
negligence.
negligent. So this is one of those cases where like Vancouver Pride really sort of led the way on this. Oh God, what was it, like 8, 9 years ago now, where they started uninviting organizations that, you know, they had all the rainbow stuff in place, but they didn't do anything right behind the scenes, or their company was, you know, negligent in some way or denied partner rights or whatever. And they basically had a very simple rule of if you clean up your act, apologize, stop doing what made us uninvite you, you're welcome back next year. Like, it's not even that there's like a 1 year ban on you. It's just you're not welcome at the next Pride. Fix your act, come back next year. That's fine. They had a very short window, but it was also some of the problems that some of the organizations that they had uninvited faced. It would have been 2 or 3 years for them to fix whatever it was that they were either not doing or doing or doing poorly or badly or what have you. This is a real instance of just put in some policies, make sure that there's better child protection involved. I do appreciate like what you said about you know, pride organizations. One of the few things that they have, and one of the few things that actually whole communities have, is their pride organizations not allowing people to march in the parade. It's one of the few tools that they have, but there should always be a way forward. There should always be a path to forgiveness and re not retribution. You know, just accountability. And I like the fact that they emphasized this is not forever. This is just for now. Just fix it and come back later. And I really appreciate that. I don't like when whole companies or organizations are just banned forever because one person did something and everyone else just didn't address it by the book. You know, there should be a way forward. So yeah, this is not the direction that I figured a story about a rodeo would go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There has also been another, frankly, surprising development in the pronoun law in Saskatchewan. And what's most surprising is that there is any development in this law. Now, just for recap here, for the first time in, 50-odd years, with the exception of Quebec, the province of Saskatchewan followed New Brunswick and used the notwithstanding clause, essentially acknowledging that their law would likely lose a charter challenge. And they have been following on to that for the last little while. But the surprising element here is that the Saskatchewan Court of Appeal, they're moving forward with it. And Egal Canada, LGBTQ advocacy organization, has teamed up with UR Pride, which is the Center for Sexuality and Gender Diversity. They have legally challenged this law, which does include the notwithstanding clause. And the shocking news is that a court of appeal has decided that the court case can actually continue. And the reason why that's shocking is nobody, as far as I'm aware, has ever challenged the use of a notwithstanding clause under the assumption that you would never win. So nobody's challenged it. No one's, it's the veto power on any legal action. But apparently, according to the Saskatchewan Court of Appeals, that might not be the case. Egal and UR Pride are moving forward. The government of Saskatchewan were bemused. Well, not bemused. They were quite surprised by this decision. And quite concerned about the courts moving forward with it. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. I think this will not only be a challenge to this specific law, but one of the only challenges in Canadian history of the notwithstanding clause in the courts.
Yeah, the isn't there a time limit on notwithstanding clauses anyway? It's between 2 and 5 years. I can't remember what it is exactly, but you cannot notwithstand a federal level law forever. Like there's a period on it. And I know one of the reasons why these things rarely get challenged is because there's an assumption that it'll take as long to challenge it as the window of the law itself. That doesn't mean it's not worth challenging, because even if you win one day before it runs out, you're still setting precedent. So there is that sort of precedent set standing angle to it. And it's also sending a message in terms of what the province is and is not willing to sort of tolerate or allow or permit, or what kind of uses of the legal system that you'd be willing to look at. It would also make other people hesitate in the future to use the notwithstanding clause, knowing that it can be overturned. So I don't know. It's this is really like legally, like the, British common law, finer points of how precedent is set and how to overturn precedent. I think this story has more to do with that. Because chances are it does take a while to overturn this kind of thing. They probably will successfully overturn it with 2 months left on the clock. But it's still important to go through this kind of thing because of precedent, establishing precedent for this kind of thing. Or it can be. It usually is.
I mean, I have the legal decision of the King's Bench, which is the court here in Saskatchewan, in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I think what's most notable here is that this legal action pretty much started before the introduction of the notwithstanding clause. They made a decision regarding the jurisdiction of it. Mm-hmm. And the practice of the court, and so we'll keep an eye on it, because frankly it's quite astonishing that any legal action at all is moving forward. Egal Canada is a legal co-counsel to the case with UR Pride. We will be jumping in on some other Canadian stories and discussing Ghana and Greece, all of the G countries, later on after our interview with Tom Hooper. But before then, we will be jumping to Perfection by Once a Tree. Once a Tree is a dynamic duo, including a name that you probably recognize, Jiley Wolf, and the producer Hayden Wolf, the Indigenous artist who did Child of the Government, is a track that we're a big fan of. Anyway, this is the great track called Perfection by Once in a Tree, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we are very excited to be joined by a guest that we're very fond of. I think we've had you join us a couple of times in the past.
Four times?
A number of times. Absolutely. And it's Tom Hooper. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me here. Glad to be back.
Excellent. Now, we didn't initially reach out to you for what is your actual focus academically, but rather for some of our long-term listeners, they may recall that we first kind of stumbled into each other around the misuse of grant funds and the forgery in some of those applications by the Pride Toronto. Now, for those who aren't familiar with this backstory, Tom, would you mind explaining for our listeners what happened and that brings us to this point in time?
Yeah, I guess about around 2018 or so, late 2018, Pride Toronto began receiving a series of grants from the federal government, primarily from the Department of Canadian Heritage, but also from other agencies as well. And they proposed in these grant projects a series of deliverables, a series of different projects that they were going to use the funds to implement. And what I discovered through doing access to information requests is that Pride Toronto was not delivering on these promises, that they were taking the money and they were using this money for other purposes, to pay their salaries, to pay off debt, and to do other things instead of actually delivering on their promises. I also discovered through those access requests that Pride Toronto was engaging in fraud and forgery as they were governing these grants and obtaining these grants. So to demonstrate that they had the support of other organizations, they submit letters of support using letterhead and signatures from organizations like the Toronto District School Board and the Peel District School Board, the 519 Community Center, stealing their letterhead and signatures, using these in unauthorized ways, and submitting those documents to the government in order to obtain the funds. So a whole bunch of things, misuse of funds, fraud, forgery, all of this went down with these various grant projects.
Now, it's worth clarifying for our audience here that Toronto Police Service, for example, has not prosecuted any particular fraud or forgery claims against Pride Toronto. However, to kind of build on the details there, there was a letter ostensibly from the Assembly of First Nations submitted by Pride Toronto as part of the CF's MARI grant application. Now, you contacted the Assembly of First Nations and they told you, quote, "This is not a document to the Assembly of First Nations, nor was it issued under the authority of any decision making of the Assembly of First Nations. The letter is attributed to a former staff member who left in 2018. And it goes on, the 519, one of the biggest community service organizations in the queer community in Toronto, likewise said that they did not author or send that letter. Same for the Toronto District School Board, the Peel Region District School Board, and the Waterloo Region District School Board. I believe you also found a document with board signatures that had been forged as well. So at the time, multiple forgeries in pursuit of grant applications from the federal government. What we also discovered, and what you also discovered, was that either that money was not spent, or it was spent on other things, and essentially was misdirected and misuse of funds. That kind of brings us a little bit up to today. The former executive director of Pride Toronto is no longer there. Pride Toronto has rather carefully insisted that these allegations, these misuse of funds, the allegations of forgery and fraud, that was all in the past. It was the people before us that did this. It's not us. It was them. It was before my time. But we are going to do better. Now, we've contacted the Pride Toronto. We are still waiting for a response from them on these allegations. But it didn't go over very well, and it triggered an investigation by Canadian Heritage into these grants that are accused of misappropriation of funds, misuse of funds, and fraud in terms of acquiring the grants. And Tom, where does that lead us to now? Like, what's happened? What did Canadian Heritage do?
Yeah, you know, it's important to acknowledge that my findings, they're very damning. But there is no evidence that the current leadership engaged in any of this bad behavior. So I'm not putting that on them. What I'm blaming the current leadership for is their failure to transparently deal with this, to come forward to our communities. Their strategy has been to downplay, to try to hide this, because it's a story very bad for the Pride Toronto brand. But ultimately, we need to be clear, the current group, there's no evidence that they engaged in this inappropriate behavior. So theirs is a failure of leadership, not a failure of, you know, doing all this shenanigans. In terms of Heritage, though, you know, they did investigate the use or the misuse of the funds. And as a result, they have demanded a whole bunch of the money back. So over $500,000 is now being paid back by Pride Toronto to the Department of Canadian Heritage. So money that was supposed to go to our communities is, instead of it going to our communities, it's been caught up in this misuse of funds thing. And so those funds are just having to be given back to the government. The problem, though, is although they have looked into the misuse of the funds, that repayment has nothing to do with the fraud and the forgery. So we still don't know why the government is looking the other way on that really serious matter.
And there's no indication that they're doing anything internal to see how did this grant get administered in the first place when there's a stack of forgeries. Like, nobody called up a single one of these references to just confirm, you know, we are Heritage Canada. Did you really do this thing? Did you really send this letter?
And that's a really important part of the story, because I think it's their lack of due diligence mm-hmm. that is now helping to explain why they don't want to get to the bottom of this either. Mm-hmm. Because as Luke listed off the number of forgeries that we have here, and I should note, those are just the forgeries of the organizations that got back to me. There are other letters that look very similar mm-hmm. to those of groups that didn't actually get back to me. So this may be even more widespread. The fact that Heritage, none of them picked up the phone and called the Assembly of First Nations to double check this. None of them called the TDSB or the Peel District School Board. Really trying to understand that is really important, because there's a crisis of accountability now mm-hmm. when we think about all of the funds that are flowing to queer organizations.
And you could say maybe they're a bit busy, but when there's $500,000 on the table, It just takes 2 minutes to send an email. Mm-hmm. Like, this is really negligent.
You know, I've worked with nonprofits. I've applied for grants with Canadian Heritage. And very often when you're talking about grants of that size, there are a lot of questions, a mm-hmm. lot of letters of support that you need to include and so on and so forth. It is quite shocking that Heritage has not sort of followed up on those. Now, Pride Toronto did commission KPMG, the big consulting firm, to review their obligations and whether or not they did fulfill them. KPMG noted that they couldn't find the paperwork to prove a lot of it in KPMG's own words. And in terms of the allegations of fraud, KPMG essentially said, we weren't hired to look into it. We're not going to look into it. We did not look into it. So those questions still remain outstanding. Now, this is, as a result of that KPMG investigation, and I should clarify, as the result also of Canadian Heritage's own investigation, they have required that Pride Toronto repay a significant sum. So significant, in fact, that Tom, that I think you kind of alluded to this earlier, that this may well be the largest penalty, financial penalty, that a queer organization in Canada has ever had to pay.
Yeah, I don't even know, I don't even think it's restricted to Canada. I'm not aware of a queer organization paying anywhere close to this amount in what is a financial penalty for misusing funds. It's historic in a really bad way.
Was it over half a million?
Was it also historic that they got a grant that large in the first place, though? Like, could it just be that there's never been this large a penalty because grants of this size are historically not really handed out that much? I mean, not that that makes it okay. I'm just contextualizing it that it could be that there's never been such a large penalty because it's rare to see grants this large go out in the first place.
Well, I think Pride Toronto has been a recipient of government grants for a long time.
In the millions?
In 2018, it really picked up into high gear because Pride Toronto was on the verge of insolvency, right? They were really close to losing it. Mm. And in steps the federal government. And what my research alludes to is that there was this backroom deal between the federal Liberal Party and the Pride Toronto board and executive director to bring the police back into the parade. And so if they agreed to do that, they would get all this money. That is coincidentally what happened, although the membership stood up and voted that down. But the Pride got this huge infusion of cash. So you're right, there was an unprecedented amount of cash flowing in, but we have this really unprecedented bad behavior that took place that's now that Pride Toronto now has to pay back. And I will just say, in terms of unprecedented cash flow, we are now in a situation where queer organizations across the country are getting millions and millions of dollars. The federal action plan, the 2SLGBT action plan, was over $100 million. And so that's going to be spread out to various queer organizations.